if the research isn't there, and if the answer isn't there, then you're not going to AI your way to that solution. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in terms of AI and using your data in smarter ways, is that we use our data so we make the best engineering decisions.
Welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted, the show dedicated to innovation in the insurance industry. Each episode, you'll get a dose of thought leadership from the industry's top business minds, influencers, innovators, and executive leaders. If you want to transform your corner of the industry and exchange innovative ideas, you need to subscribe to this podcast. Now here's your host, Abel Travis.
Hey, everybody, and thank you for joining me here today on the Insurance Innovators Unscripted podcast dedicated to the topic of insurance innovation. Now, you know, I just wanted to mention, you know, I had an opportunity to sit in with the startups that are taking part in the Hartford InsurTech Hubs program that's powered by Startup Bootcamp InsurTech. You know, I had Sabine van der Linden on the podcast just a few weeks ago, and we talked about what Startup Bootcamp is doing in partnership with a lot of organizations within Hartford in order to ensure that Hartford is the InsurTech capital for the Northeast. So, you know, I had the opportunity to mentor with and, you know, sit firsthand with the startups and impart all of the expertise and knowledge that I had in order to, you know, help these startups continue to innovate this industry. You know, if those of you that's been listening to me speak and, you know, listening to the podcast for some time know that I'm very passionate about what's happening in this insurance industry. And I know that there's opportunities to just continue to do things that's going to help the industry become, you know, a better industry in terms of what we do and how we serve our customers and policyholders long term. You know, so I enjoyed the opportunity to sit with the startups, to talk to them about what's happening in the industry and to give them, you know, some mentoring around what they should consider overall and long term, you know, just to assist them in the mission that they have, which is very similar to my mission. So, you know, one of the things that I am going to be doing this year is, you know, I'll be talking at quite a few conferences, you know, this year just to, you know, really hone in on the message and, you know, just help this industry understand that there's opportunities to really do things differently in this industry. So, you know, I am very excited to be able to do that. There's a couple of other things that I'm going to be doing later this year. One of them, you know, I'll announce in a couple of weeks, you know, but it's something that's really exciting. It's a goal that I wanted to accomplish over time. So, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, as I mentioned before, what I'm doing here provides a lot of value to those that are listening to this podcast. And, you know, hopefully you find the value and just continue to share, you know, what you're hearing here, and even share the podcast with your colleagues and your friends. So thank you. So, you know, first and foremost, I do want to recognize the sponsor of this episode of the podcast, and that is Vortex Legal. Innovation in the insurance field is exciting, and Vortex Legal is a unique and proven solution to help improve a company's loss ratio by substantially reducing legal expenses. Their nationwide network of local attorneys attend the voluminous and routine and predictable hearings for a flat rate, not an hourly rate. So Vortex Legal solution works with both staff counsel offices as well as outside law firms. They've saved many carriers millions of dollars. So if you want to learn more, just contact Jonathan Broder at 954-473-2648 or visit vortexlegal.com. Now, you know, I'm going to introduce today's guest, and that's Dr. Jap DeVries. Now, Jap is the Vice President of Innovation for Science and Technology at FM Global. FM Global is a leading commercial property insurer of the world's largest businesses, providing more than one-third of Fortune 1000 companies with engineering-based risk management. Hey, Jap, you know, I'd like to welcome you to the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Abel.
Hey, you know, so Jap, you know, you have a pretty interesting background that spans, you know, different industries and so on. You know, so just talk me through your career and then the path that led you to what you're doing today.
Yeah, I've listened to your previous podcast, and it's very interesting to hear people having different backgrounds and having different things. I think mine is going to be a little bit different altogether, as my name probably gives away. I was born and I grew up in the Netherlands. I lived there until about 2004. I got my bachelor's degree in aeronautical engineering from Amsterdam. And during that time, I did one internship at Embry-Riddle, which is a pilot school in Daytona Beach. And I also did an internship in Cambridge at Kendall Square, where we worked on the magnetically levitated trains. So I had quite a bit of experience living in the U.S. So when I graduated in 2002, I decided I wanted to continue with grad school in the U.S. So I got accepted to the University of Central Florida, ended up getting my master's degree there in aerospace engineering. And then I went to Texas A&M. I got my doctorate degree in mechanical engineering. And throughout my academic career, I was really focused on different types of propulsion. At first, so we were looking at adding nanoparticles to solid rocket propellants, for instance, to see if we could affect the way it would burn and the burn rate. But mostly at the end, I was focused on land-based gas turbines and the combustion process inside the engines and working on what's called fuel flexibility. Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Back to the Future when Doc Brown throws a banana peel in the DeLorean and it flies away. So that's ultimate fuel flexibility. We never got to that point, but we were able to have turbines run on a variety of fuels and stay within the emissions that were set by the EPA, for instance. And so that was my work, very, very detailed experiment, a lot on chemistry and kinetics and that kind of thing. So in 2009, I graduated in May of 2009, and I don't know if you remember, but the market wasn't doing exactly well in May of 2009, right? We just came from the biggest, deepest recession. We were in the middle of it, basically, since the Great Depression. And I actually was already lining myself up to continue in the academic world to take on a postdoc position until a friend of mine called me who went to Princeton, and he said he was working at FM Global. And he said they were looking for a research scientist. So, and at the time, I hadn't heard of FM Global. So I heard it was an insurance company. I was very surprised that I would be contacted by an insurance company, right? Why would an insurance company be interested in a rocket scientist of sorts? But it turned out that they were doing actually very detailed and large-scale research in the realm of loss prevention, mainly for fire hazards and protection. Which isn't exactly, rocket propulsion or engine propulsion, but or engine combustion, but it, a lot of the science behind it is the same. So I saw some of the things that they were working on, very large-scale testing. They have a 108,000-square-foot burn lab facility right here in Rhode Island, and they can test anything up to 50 to 55 feet high, so they can really do real-scale rack storage testing of the client's facilities to figure out what type of sprinkler configuration was best suited. They do large-scale explosion testing. They got a five-ton shake table in which they can do mimic any kind of earthquake. So I was very interested right away. I mean, these are the kind of things that you could never do in an academic setting, right? So they didn't have to convince me long. It didn't take long for me to be convinced that, burning stuff and blowing stuff up and really going into my inner pyromaniac was quite a fun thing to do. So I did that for 8 years, basically. We were looking for fire protection for lithium-ion batteries, for instance. So all some of these emerging technologies, they come with their own problems, like data centers. Automatic rack retrieval systems are very challenging because these are typically open top containers that fill up with sprinkler water, which then means that water doesn't get to the fire. So there's all these very challenging things that are emerging when some of these new technologies and some of these new markets come with it. So we're doing a lot of research there. And then in the last 2 years, I started focusing more and more on some more advanced technologies, right? So I recognized early on, maybe because of my aerospace background, that drones were going to be very big. And so I got my commercial drone pilot license right in August in 2016 when the FAA opened up the airspace and made that possible. I was doing a lot for image processing, mostly for infrared thermography, and I was building neural networks to automatically detect certain events happening based on IR imagery. And I was building my own 360 virtual reality videos from large-scale fire tests so we could take these experiences of these fires and go directly to our clients and show what it would be like if their forest product facility would be on fire, for instance, or very convincing tools. And we worked on some mixed reality stuff too, remote engineering. So I really started to attract all these exotic project. So then when FM Global decided they wanted to have a dedicated innovation team, they decided that this summer, I was a natural candidate for the lead for science and technology. So I applied and I got hired. I like to think right away, given my background, and that's where I'm right now. So I'm the vice president for innovation for science and technology for FM Global.
You know, so Jap, you know, I definitely want to dig into the work that you're doing with the innovation unit. But even before we jump into that, you know, when I think about FM Global, you know, FM Global is an institution that's been around for over, you know, 175 years. You know, so before we jump into the innovation piece, you know, just talk to me about the company, its history, and then the importance of what FM Global is doing in the property segment.
Yeah, so FM Global is, you know, I think it's a very different type of a business model from a lot of our competitors. We only do commercial property, and like you said, we insure about one out of every three companies in the Fortune 1000. So, we most of our clients are very, very large and have facilities all over the world. But more than that, I like to think of FM Global as one of the first insurtech companies, and that dates back all the way to 1835 when a gentleman named Zechariah Allen, he's the founder, was really working on a lot of risk improvements for his textile mills, which he was running in Rhode Island at the time. And he recognized there was a lot of losses through fire, so he was really experimental. He experimented with a lot of fire protection devices. And then when he installed all that and he took all that those loss prevention measures, he went back to his insurer and asked if he could get a reduction in premium. And I think this story kind of sounds familiar, right? And the insurer said no. So then Zechariah Allen went and got together with a couple of other factory operators and said, well, why don't we just get together and form a mutual company, which was called the Manufacturers Mutual Fire Insurance Company, and see if we can just get together with like-minded folks. So then in the aggregate, our premium would go down. And then at the end of the year, so if there's money left, we can credit it back, right? So they did that, and it was very successful. I mean, in the first 14 years of their existence, I think they reduced their fire losses by about 50%. And that's huge, right? I mean, if a startup would come to me right now and say, we're going to reduce your risk losses by 50% over the next 14 years, you probably won't believe them, right, and for good reasons. But if they could show you that they actually could do it, they would probably be the most successful startup company in the insurtech business today. So, but for the next 180 years, the philosophy for FM Global remained the same, and that's that the majority of losses are indeed preventable. So our focus is really based on scientifically based engineering expertise that we have. And we really like to, we really see resilience as a business opportunity for clients. And I'm not sure, I always like to use this story about that Forrest Gump when he starts his Bubba Gump shrimp company, and they get caught in a story. They do really poorly at first, right? They barely catch enough for a shrimp cocktail, and then there's a storm. I believe it was Storm Carmen. Well, the whole competition got wiped out. They were the only ones standing, and all of a sudden, business was booming, right? And business was booming for a long time. And that's really a good analogy for what it is if you really install loss prevention measures and resilience with your clients, right? If something really catastrophic happens and your clients happen to be one of the few standing and they still have a roof over their building, then that really gives them a competitive advantage. And they can be really gaining with that in terms of market share. And on the flip side is that if you don't take into account and you don't work on loss prevention, then if you're the only one that's not standing, right, then you're going to lose a lot of market share. So I think we have been very innovative throughout the years in terms of loss prevention technology. What we really want to accomplish with a dedicated innovation team is to get our products to the market faster and to really tap into some of the stuff that's going on there in the whole insurtech ecosystem. Right, that's one of the reasons why I'm happy to be on your podcast to be part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so thinking about the dedicated innovation team, you know, as I mentioned, you know, FM Global has been around for a very long time, 175 years or so, or more than that. You know, what you mentioned is you look at FM Global as one of the first insurtech organizations. You know, so just thinking about that, why start the dedicated innovation unit now? And, you know, why not at an earlier point or at a different point in FM Global's history?
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously innovation is a hot topic. And I think there's a couple of realizations that led to us having a dedicated team right now. I think one of us is that we are more and more forced to look outside of our organization to capture innovation because there's just incredibly talented startups out there, and you spoke to several of them, and they all bring something to the table that we may not have thought about, or we don't want to miss that opportunity. We don't have a long track record of either acquisition or partnerships or investing in third-party startups, and we certainly didn't have a dedicated unit for that. So so that's one of the reasons. There's also increased digitization, which leads to new challenges and new opportunities, and a lot of the insurtech startups are moving in that direction. I think also what we wanted to have is a centralized point where some of these new ideas that several business units within the organizations are working on, where those ideas can come together. And we can actually have a systematic way of ranking those ideas and seeing which ones we should act upon and which ones maybe we can hand back to a business unit to be done internally and which ones are complex enough or does not. We don't have the expertise or the manpower, so which ones require a partnership. Yeah, I think it's really the realization that technology is moving faster and faster, and some of the processes that were in place were arguably maybe not capable of keeping up at a pace that we thought was necessary for us to continue to be the disruptor instead of being the disrupted. So with that in mind, it was decided that it was a good idea to have a dedicated innovation team in place.
You know, so thinking about this dedicated innovation team, as I look across the industry, I look at a lot of the incumbent carriers in the space, similar to FM Global, start to really, create dedicated innovation units. I look at the Travelers of the world and the Hartfords and some of the other large carriers, and you're seeing that they're beginning to move in that direction. So they're either doing intraventuring or doing things internally to determine where there's opportunity within the value chain to innovate and to do things a little bit differently. So thinking about what they're doing in comparison to what FM Global is doing, what types of innovations are you diving into? And then where do you see the long-term value for FM Global based on what you all are doing?
Yeah, so that's a very good question, right? And I think there's a couple of things that we can bring to the table. Like I said, partnerships for us would be new. Some of the technologies that we're looking at is, for instance, drones is something that's clearly beneficial to various parts within the company. And I see a lot of insurance companies, other insurance companies working on that. So we want to do that too, but we want to do it in a systematic way. So we really keep tabs on what the business case is and how to create an execution plan that makes sense. And also how to keep tabs on lessons learned, right, from that. Another thing is IoT. I just came back from Chicago where there's an IoT insurance meeting. I actually met Matteo Carbone was there actually presenting. So I think your first guest, right, if I believe correctly. And so he's an interesting gentleman, very nice. And he and so there's a lot of potential there. I think a lot of it is in P&C, so it's not highly focused on commercial yet. But you see more and more applications where IoT can be applied in commercial setting as well. There's the augmented reality and virtual reality, and this can be for training purposes or it can be for client interaction, right? So a lot of our client interaction is through relaying some of our engineering message for loss prevention. We have about 1,800 engineers operating all throughout the world, and we're constantly trying to add tools for them so they can interact with a client. They can show, look, this is what your building looks like because it's in a floodplain or a 100-year or 500-year flood map. And then there's things like blockchain we need to look at. We need to keep tabs on, see how that's going to change some of the insurance landscape. Remote engineering basically it's a kind of a standard list that if you look at insurtech topics or innovation in insurance, if you just Google it, you come up with a standard list, and we're looking at all those things. I think the difference in our case is that our focus is on preventing losses more than anything else for our clients, right? So it's really about building that resiliency and working through the partnerships with the clients so they can so they're more resilient.
Yeah, I think about that in comparison to even what some of the newcomers and new entrants into the space are doing, and I find it so refreshing on what you're saying is you're really focused on preventing losses and trying to figure out how to add that value back to your clients so your clients could mitigate some of the potential for loss that's going there, whereby a lot of the newer comers, while they're focused on many parts of the spectrum from an insurtech and an innovation perspective, a lot may be focused more on the distribution side, and less on the side of, you know, potentially preventing losses when you think about where the economics lie within the industry. You know, so to me, that's something that's very exciting and refreshing to see, especially an institution like FM Global really focus on that perspective. You know, so just thinking about that, you know, that makes me excited. But what exactly, you know, makes you excited about the work that you're doing with FM Global?
Yeah, so that's a good question, because like I said, I walked away from a job where I was literally putting stuff on fire and blowing stuff up every day. And so that was pretty exciting in itself. I think there's a big difference to what I was doing as a research scientist versus what I'm doing currently, right? If you're looking at loss prevention or fire protection, it's really looking at fire protection for lithium-ion battery, for instance. One of the last projects I was working on was finding protection for distilled spirits, for cognac barrel distilleries. Very interesting project. Those are solutions for very specific cases. What I really wanted to is open it up and see how we can apply some of these new technologies that we're not that familiar with, right? How can we implement those, and how can that lead to better product or processes for our clients? I think you're actually absolutely right. If you want to do better as an insurance business, you got to work on the expense side of things, and I think there's a lot of insurtech companies out there, or you got to do something more in client interaction, and maybe there's some AI applications or robotic automation to get more clients or even get better underwriting models, for instance. But the third one is really prevent a loss from happening in the first place, right? And I think I get very excited about that notion, right, that most losses are preventable. Because do you remember Craig Ferguson at the Late Late Show? He said he would never gamble at a casino. He said, because if you gamble, it's like giving money to a casino and maybe they give it back, right? And if a client thinks like that with regards to their insurer, I think the battle is already halfway lost, because there's a lot more at stake than that, right? I mean, if you have a loss, just imagine if you have to pick up your school from your children from a school because it had to evacuate because it was just downwind from a chemical spill or a chemical fire, right? That chemical plant, those people probably never heard of that chemical plant before, right? So that's going to be that first interaction is having to evacuate or seeing a big fire or seeing a big disaster on TV. Whatever insurance company you have, it's not like Men in Black where you have this magic wand and you go around and fix the reputation that costs. So there's no way to really replace the reputational cost, right? So the best approach there is to prevent that loss from happening in the first place, or if there is a small fire, just prevent it from having it become a big fire, right? Or if there is an earthquake, make sure that it doesn't demolish the sprinkler system or the sprinkler pipe, so that if there is a fire right after an earthquake, make sure that those fire protection systems are still working. And that really gets me excited that at the end of the day, what you're doing, and this has been alluded to before in your podcast too, right, is that a lot of times we're overly apologetic, I think, working for an insurance company. But at the end of the day, you know, if there's a big tornado or if something bad happens, you're going to be there. And we're going to be there to pay out claims and to help. Right, and we're going to be the first one in, and I think it's an honorable thing to do. And I think if you approach it both from the underwriting perspective as well as the engineering perspective, I think it's just something that I'm very excited about being a part of.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, to what the point that you were saying in terms of, you know, we're going to be there to pay out the claims, right? And I think that's really the expectation of the policyholder. It really is to make sure that, you know, that they know that they feel protected in the event that something goes wrong, such as a hurricane or a fire or something to that something from that perspective, you know. So let's switch gears a little bit, Jap. You know, so when I think about FM Global, you know, just based on the conversation you and I are having here today, you know, it seems like that this organization is a very forward-thinking organization. And I think looking from the outside in, I'm not sure if a lot of folks would get that from what they see and what they know about FM Global. You know, so I think with it being forward-thinking, I really think about the innovation mindset and, you know, and how important having an innovation mindset is to being able to push an organization to the next level. And I see that happening with FM Global. But yet, you know, when I talk about the innovation mindset, what I recognize is that it strikes fear in those that feel that they may be left behind within their careers. You know, so whenever I speak about it, I always take or change the word innovation to growth and really then begin to talk about the growth mindset instead, even though to me, the two can be somewhat synonymous. You know, so from your perspective, Jap, you know, how do you get an organization to get over that fear and embrace the innovation or the growth mindset in order to continue to push organizations to the next level, as we're seeing play out as we speak with FM Global?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question, D. I think, you know, the one reason why I took this job on, because these are the type of questions that I asked actually when I interviewed for this position. And one thing that is really clear is that we're a very specialty focused company, right? So we know exactly what we do, who we insure, just a large commercial property insurer. And our values are really aligned. So you can ask literally a janitor at our research campus what's our philosophy at FM Global, and they'll say majority of losses are preventable, right? It's really drilled into us, and people realize that through internal communication, etc. We're really proud of the research that we do, right? And we have we do very frequent research campus tours for prospective clients, but also we do it for sometimes for students to get people involved, and it really shows some of the world-renowned scientists really working working on some top-level research. So everybody in the organization understands that our engineering is backed by research. Like I said, we have about 1,800 engineers throughout the world. You wouldn't be a good engineer if you weren't constantly thinking on how can I solve this problem better. I see that throughout the organization. Actually, as soon as we announce that we have an innovation team, people are really approaching me from all directions. Have you thought of this? I've got this good idea. And, you know, it's a little bit overwhelming. But in terms of, like you said, our mission is to foster a culture of innovation within the organization, and to just see that all these people coming out of the woodwork and really approaching us and being very positive about what we do and what we can do for them and how it can help their clients. And all of a sudden, there's a direct pathway for people that have ideas all throughout the organization, whether it's the CEO all the way down to a janitor. Everybody can bring an idea to the table, and there's a centralized point now where they can bring that idea. So everybody with a good idea has a chance, right? You don't have to work your way through various levels of management in order to get an idea to where it needs to be in order to be accepted. So I think it's really a level of excitement that's generated within the company that way. I think there's still a lot of operational jobs to be done. So just because there's an innovation team, we're not going to uproot what we do, right? We're not going to be making toasters tomorrow. We will always be a large insurance company. So there's a lot of tasks that need to be done, everyday tasks. There's a lot of like basic skills for sales and for interacting with clients, basic engineering skills, basic soft skills. That doesn't have to be uprooted, right? Those skills are still incredibly valuable. So people that are more comfortable, working with the skills that they have now, there's a place for them. There's no need to think that we're not going to change anything there. I think there's more opportunity now for new technology to be implemented, and I think a lot of people are excited about that. And if you want to do the job that you were doing, and you were good at it, then that's fine too, right? But at least you have a chance. If you have an idea, there's a chance for you to get that to where it needs to be.
Yeah, you know, so you mentioned, the concept of jobs to be done, right? And really focusing on, you know, what the real need is, either for the customer, and the customer could be multifold. It could be, internal or external, or those that we're servicing or partnering with what we're focusing on. You know, so when I recently, I had a discussion with an insurtech leader, and I'm not going to mention that leader on this podcast right now. But you know, that person felt that, you know, when we think about innovation and we think about the needs in terms of what the customers are looking for, that person, you know, felt that the customers really are looking to go more towards the quick right now model that Amazon or that a company like Google fosters or Apple or some of the other larger technology organization fosters. You know, so when we talked about innovating insurance, the perspective of that leader was that we needed to go digital, or we needed to leverage AI, or we needed to put products through blockchain and things of the like. Now, you know, personally, you know, I believe that there's opportunity to innovate all parts of the insurance value chain, and we don't have to, you know, try to leverage all elements of what we're hearing today, because we may not be able to do it well, or, you know, organizations may not be able to execute on it because it may not be meeting the true jobs to be done for our customers. You know, so, you know, from your perspective, you know, how is the need for innovation changing the insurance industry from a carrier perspective, but then also from a customer perspective?
Yeah, I think there's more, you know, just in general, the demand for, you know, information at your fingertips, you know, has always been there. But, you know, like I said, I was going to try an analogy here. So think about oncology, something very different, like cancer research, right? If you're diagnosed, my wife and I, we go every year, we go to honor her mom, we go on a walk for brain cancer, right? And there's really no cure for brain cancer. And that's not because there's not an AI that hasn't been able to sort through all the data that's out there to give us a cure. That's simply because there's no cure. There's no research that has led to something that we can provide to cancer victims, because there's no cure. So, and there's something similar for a lot of the very complicated things that our clients are doing. They cannot be solved by simple machine learning algorithms, because machine learning needs to be trained, right? So if you want to know how to protect lithium-ion batteries, or if you want to know how to protect, like I said, automatic retrieval systems, or if you want to know how sprinkler pipe respond to earthquakes of various kinds, if the research isn't there, and if the answer isn't there, then you're not going to AI your way to that solution, right? Because that's, again, if the solution isn't there, it isn't there. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in terms of AI and using your data in smarter ways. And I think what the client really would like to see in the future, and I don't really focus much on the competition, but from FM's perspective, is that we use our data so we make the best engineering decisions, right? So if we have an engineering solution, then we can use data, like our loss history data, in the aggregate to see where should we, what is the best for the client to put their loss prevention money? It's oftentimes for fire and sprinklers, right? But there's a whole slew of other things. And it's really helpful if we can use our data to guide our clients in the best way, to tell them, well, look, if you do, you know, these follow up on these recommendations based on, you know, the fact that we've been around for 200 years, we can show you that there's going to be a huge difference, right? And we can already tell. I mean, if you have a sprinkled versus unsprinkled facility, the losses on average for an unsprinkled facility are 5 to 6 times greater, right? And we used to always think that for natural hazards, we're like an act of God, there's not a whole lot we can do. Well, in fact, there's something you can do. In the aggregate, the average loss for folks that have made a lot of and followed a lot of engineering recommendations is around 500,000, right? And if they didn't follow recommendations, it's about 7 times higher than that. So I think some people are going a little bit too crazy looking for what's disruptive, and they kind of run around like chicken without heads sometimes. I think you just need to look at what are the tools that are available, whether it's better data processing, whether it is the fact that if you go through digital transformation, all of a sudden you have a lot of data at your hands. So that naturally comes with opportunities in terms of analytics. But it's also the tools that you've already had, right? And in our case, and FM Global's case, it's the greatest resources we have in terms of research. It's the resources that we have in terms of our engineering expertise. And it's really putting all those tools together that keeps making us competitive. And I think people think of a disruption of an overnight thing, but a lot of times disruptions happen because, you know, things change over time, and it's a process too, right? So you just need to keep up. You need to be aware of what's out there. You need to be aware of what the client wants and needs, and just keep adding tools to your toolbox in order to meet those demands of the client. And that's my philosophy.
Yeah, you know, Jap, I think that's a great philosophy in terms of how to think about those things, especially when we think about big data and the ability to leverage whatever data may potentially be at your fingertips in order to be able to utilize that to provide that additional value back out to the client. You know, so continuing to think about the concepts around what FM Global is doing in innovation and also what other organizations and other carriers are doing with innovation. You know, you specifically demonstrated the benefits of incorporating things like what we talked about earlier, augmented reality and virtual reality and drone technology and rapid prototyping to FM Global. And when we think about those things, you know, all of those could be considered or are considered disruptive technologies that could provide significant value in insurance. Yet when I look at other carriers in, you know, the industry, other incumbent carriers in the industry, you know, a lot of those incumbent carriers haven't even embraced some of the things that you've introduced or you've demonstrated the value to FM Global with. You know, so as I think about that, that truly does represent a true innovation to me. You know, so what makes you and FM Global so different from the rest of the industry, where you know that you're embracing all of these different things in order to continue to push the organization forward and provide that additional value to your policyholders?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think there's a couple of things, right? I think, you know, Clayton Christensen's famous book, he talked about the capacity of a company to do things basically to rely on resource and their processes and their values, right? So in our resources, we have a research department, for instance, that has 60 PhDs all over the world, right? And they are allowed to publish, so they are being exposed. Their work is exposed to the broader community. And it's tested and vetted, you know, and we have to submit papers and journal publications just like anyone else. So we're really part of the scientific community. That means that those guys get to see the latest and greatest research that's out there. Then on top of that, so that's the research side. On top of that, like I said, we have about 1,800 engineers, about 1,500 or 1,600 or so are field engineers. They go through our clients and they meet with our clients on a daily basis. So they get exposed to all the latest technologies that our clients are working with, right? Because, like I said, some of these new ways that warehouses are created, they require more new and innovative ways in terms of protection. I think some of the warehouses now are 100 feet tall, right? So how we're going to protect that? That's something that wasn't around 50 years ago. Or some robotic automatic retrieval systems. Those are the things that our engineers are exposed to. And if they see a problem, then we have they can't solve it. There's no engineering solutions. Then it can be fed back to research. So it's a whole ecosystem within FM Global that has been able to address some of these engineering problems. I think where we are now with the innovation team is really trying to incorporate technologies that we haven't thought of, right? That hasn't been on our radar because, you know, just because of luck or it happened, we had, you know, it's not something that seems to be of immediate value, right? And we haven't thought about it. So something that some of the startup communities are coming up with in terms of data processing can be very helpful for us too. And we really want to see if we can bring utilize that and add and bring those products to our clients faster. So, but I think the reason why, you know, to get back to the reason why it works for us is because it doesn't fundamentally change the values at FM Global, right? I think the innovation team is going to be, it's not going to be doing something that is completely disruptive within the organization, right? The values are already there. The capabilities were already there. The resources were already there. It's just now we have a centralized innovation team to tie a lot of these things together in an even more and faster and efficient way.
So Jap, so do you think that it's important for the whole organization to embrace the innovation concept, especially around what you guys are doing with the innovation team?
Yeah, in a sense, I think that's kind of what you hope. You always want everybody to love you, right? So there's no. To me, it's more about having the authority to make things happen for the innovation team. Look, we are a team of five. We have two senior vice presidents and three vice presidents, and we report directly to the COO of the company. So that means that we put some real horsepower into this, right? And we have some real clear focus and a clear mission of what it is that we try to accomplish. I think there's always people within any organization that like the status quo. They're maybe a few years away from retirement and they like to kind of the things they are. I think those people will be fine. Like I said, there's a lot of jobs to be done that fit that profile. So if you may not score 100%, but I think it's about the overall philosophy and the positive response to that you get within the organization, within the enterprise for what you're doing. And I think we're in a really good place like that, again, as an engineering-minded minded company.
You know, so I could imagine with you as, you know, one of the creators of the Advanced Technology Lab at FM, you know, that you've experienced, you know, many successes, but also I would assume that you also potentially experienced projects that didn't go the way that you've intended. You know, so just thinking about how that works with innovation, you know, I think it becomes really important to, you know, work within an organization that embraces outcomes that may be successful outcomes or that may be failed outcomes. You know, so how do you handle failed outcomes? And is FM Global an organization that embraces what could be potentially be seen as failures or, you know, an opportunity to pivot into something else?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, obviously, if you're trying a lot of new technologies, not everything will work. I think there's about 1,400 insurtech startups right now, right? And not all of them will be successful. In fact, the majority of them probably won't be. And the same for us. I like to think of ourselves as a startup within the organization. So a lot of the projects are still in a very beginning stage. And if they're going to be judged by the value they produce, then they would probably not be attractive in a regular setting, right, in a regular business unit. So I think one thing that's really helping us is that the innovation team at FM Global is placed outside of any of the regular business units. And that means that our failure or our success is not measured by some of the key performance indicators by which some of the other parts of the operations are being judged, right? So that means that there's a real vision from the C-suite down that the innovation team can try things that might not work, right? And we can work on things that are allowed to fail. But I think the important thing is there is that you don't just the fact that you're allowed to fail shouldn't make you just do stuff to do stuff, right? Because it doesn't matter if you fail. I think it's very important that you have a structure in place that you try to do. You try to make a business case. You try to come up with a process that leads to that proof of concept or that minimum viable product, and stay lean in the beginning and just add resources organically when stuff turns out to be successful. And I think it's also important that if something does fail, not to try to sell it as a win somehow. Sometimes that within large organization, if something is really didn't work out, we still try to pretend like it was a success and just discontinue it, but it was still successful, right? I think you just got to be honest. If something doesn't work, and something has either the technology is not feasible, there's no market. I mean, something can fail for a variety of reasons. It's to fail forward and to learn from it, and to document what you've learned from it, and to keep that centralized sort of database, so you can apply what you've learned from something that didn't work out and apply it to the next thing you're working on, right? So, sometimes you want to move fast and you want to try stuff fast, but you want to do it in a structured and organized way. Sometimes it's hard also to make an immediate business case for something. Sometimes you also want to do stuff just to learn more about the technology, and then it's more of a learning project, right? So everything can have value, but I'm very happy the way our team is structured and positioned within the organization that we are going to be allowed to work on stuff that's going to fail eventually.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. You know, I think about what some of the, let's say, some of the tech companies are doing with their innovation units, knowing that it's not in insurance, but what they try to do is figure out where there's other opportunities to enhance their value for whatever their mission is, and they completely separate the new product from an innovation perspective element from, you know, the the products that are really going to be driving the profitability, at least in the short term, knowing that in the long term, of course, that whatever new that's being worked on could potentially be a profit center and a profit leader for that organization. So I absolutely agree with you when you say that, sort of keeping it separate and not being held to that, but then giving yourselves the opportunity to fail. At some point, continue to produce something that's going to be adding a lot of additional value to the organization. So what that does, it brings me to a question that I like to ask all of my guests on this podcast. And, that question is, if I'm someone that's listening to you and myself speak about, what you guys are doing at FM Global and what you're doing in the realm of innovation, and I want to take something tangible back to my desk to do things differently and not do things in the manner of the status quo and just think and do things and innovate, at my desk, from your perspective, what's that one or two things that me as a listener could do in order to do things differently than what I normally do?
Okay. Yeah. So because as a startup, I've just been so impressed with what I've seen from the startups in terms of the business, the positive attitude, in the insurtech startups, and there's so much energy that I think no one would ever thought and subscribe to the insurance business, right? I think from a startup perspective, I think if you interact with a large incumbent or large carrier and you pitch an idea, I think one advice that I have is to really have the value proposition of that large carrier in mind when you do your pitch. And I think you discussed this a little bit with your previous guests as well. So make sure that your value proposition aligns with that to the person that you're pitching it to, for investment or for partnership, or you want them to be the first client, right? Either way, it's good that you know what the value proposition is and what the mission is and the culture of that company. So that would be my advice for startups. Other than that, I think at startups, one of the reasons why I wanted to be on this podcast is to maybe have a slight pivot in the insurtech community to really focus on the resiliency aspect of a building and how that can be part of and add value to an insurance company. So to prevent losses really from an engineering perspective. And there's some companies out there, if there's anybody thinking about a product and they think, oh, this is a great engineering solution, but haven't thought about it as an insurtech company, then I'm here to say that it might be, if it can prevent a loss. And for people that work within large organizations, I think it's sometimes don't assume just a no all the time when you try to pitch something. When I was a research scientist, my core day-to-day business really did not involve drones. It did not involve creating virtual reality apps. It did not involve all the other things. And usually when you just start with an idea, I think a lot of managers are sometimes more susceptible to it and more open to it than you might think, right? So sometimes the first no is your own. Is the one that you hear in your own head, right? So don't let that first no stop you from doing stuff that falls outside of your day-to-day activities. I think a lot of managers really recognize that there are great ideas within their organization and they're quite perceptive to it. So just make sure you have a good story, a good narrative, and a good idea. And I think take some risks, even in if you're working for a large organization.
Great. I absolutely think that's really good advice. So, Jap, I do want to say thank you for taking the time to speak with me about yourself and about FM Global on the podcast. If our listeners or if anyone wanted to learn more about what you do or what FM Global is doing, how can I get them that information?
Yeah, so if they want to know more about FM Global and what FM Global is doing, for instance, all the stuff that they're doing with the Resilience Index or cyber, they can just go on YouTube or just go to fmglobal.com. If they want to contact me or have great ideas, just contact me on LinkedIn. We're always looking for new talent to the innovation team and for talented people. So contact me on LinkedIn if you have any great ideas, if you want to know more.
Great. Well, Jap, once again, I do want to say thank you for your time today. I definitely appreciate it. And personally, I look forward to, continuing to follow all of the great things that you and FM Global are doing.
Yeah, and thank you. I think you're doing a fantastic job with this podcast. I've listened to every episode, and it's perfect for me in the commute. So I hope that you're going to be around for a long time doing this. It's very helpful for me.
Hey, everybody. You know, once again, I want to say thank you for listening to this episode of the Insurance Innovators Unscripted podcast. Now, I just want to remind everybody to take one moment if you're listening to this on one of the podcast platforms, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, iHeartRadio. Don't forget to click the subscribe button, and that way you'll get the new episodes every week. So, you know, share this with your friends and tune in next week when we speak with Stacy Brown.